All right, so we look at the Sedra of Toldos this morning. The Torah, as we know, is Kula Kodesh. It's all holy, and it's Kula Chachma. It's all the wisdom of Hashem, profound and infinite Chachma. And yet, we know the Torah is understood both on simple and more complex levels. And therefore, we have to look at the Psukim, not just for the story that they're relating to us, but in fact the inner ideas, the deeper ideas of Torah, and surely it's found in the birth of Yaakov and Esav. So if you turn to the beginning, Perek Chafei, we'll start Pasuk Chaf Dalet. You all know that Rivka had a very turbulent pregnancy, and she was told in the Nevuah, prophetically, that she's going to have twins. So that we discussed in the past, by the way. I think one of the years, the whole agitation of the twins. So let's take up the next area. Her days to give birth became complete. Yomeha. So Rashi says that it's really her days, because in fact she gave birth prematurely. When a time for childbirth came. But here it says, literally her days were filled to give birth. That she, in fact, gave birth after 7 months. Again, not uncommon with twins, but she gave birth preterm. It's as if they were in a rush to get out. And in fact, there were twins in her womb, in her belly. So the Torah writes this as if we should be astonished, or someone should be astonished. And behold, there were twins in her womb. What is she so surprised about? That was the nevuah that she had received. In fact, you'll have two, not only children, but you're carrying two nations within you. Two peoples will emerge from your womb. So the fact that she had twins is not surprising. What was the surprise? So Rav Hirsch says that the surprise was they're identical twins, Yaakov and Esav. Because in fact, if she had this nevuah that there'd be a great divergence between her two sons, pulling in opposite directions, their natures and temperaments are completely different. So the assumption was, the expectation was, that the twins would be fraternal, that they may won't even look alike, no more than any other brothers or sisters. But in fact, that was the surprise. That they came out, and except for a certain feature which was different on Esav than on Yaakov, the exact same appearance, exact same facial appearance, build, constitution, etc. That's why, in fact, it was easy for Yaakov to later deceive his father into thinking that he was Esav, because their resemblance, again, except for the ruddiness of the skin and something else, their resemblance was identical. Vayetze harishon admoni. The first came out with a ruddy complexion. Admoni. Kulo kaderes seyar. Completely covered with a hairy mantle. So it's unusual for an infant to be born that way, with a full beard, but Esav was the exception. He came out, despite, again, the similarities between Yaakov and Esav. Esav had not just a ruddy complexion, he had a finished look about him, covered in hair. But he grew Shemo, Esav, and they called him Esav. Rashi says, Hakol Karulo, everybody called him Esav. Lefisha Hoyo Naasev and Nigmar Bisaro Kiven Shanim Harbe. Because he was complete. Esav, like Asui. He was finished. He was done. He was a complete product. As you'd say about a person who already has a beard, he's fully grown, etc. Kiven Shanim Harbe. That's what Esav looked like. Now, Rashi says two things that we should take note of. First, Ve'etzerishon admoni, Rashi says, Simon hu sheyeh shofech damim. It's a sign that this child will be a murderer. Shofech damim, red. What is the sign? What exactly is Rashi saying? That it was decreed that Esav should be a murderer from the time he emerged from the womb because he had a reddish complexion? How could that be? I think the other question, which for us might be more interesting, is that why was he called Esav? Why? Because he came out the finished product. And he said the same thing in the next pasuk. V'acharchein yotza achiv, and after that his brother emerged. V'yado ochezez ba'akev Esav, and his hand was grasping the heel of Esav. V'yikrosh mo Yaakov, and his name was called, and he was called Yaakov. So Esav was named by everybody, Vayikru, plural. Yaakov was just named Vayikra. The simple pshat is that his father named him. But isn't there a better source of names than calling a child by some accidental feature? He came out with a ruddy complexion, so you call him finished? What kind of name is that? And because Yaakov grasped the heel of his brother as his brother emerged from the womb, so for that, based on that, you name a child. And it's not as if they didn't have people they could name after. Rivka's father was deceased. Could have called him Bezuel. Yitzchak's mother was deceased. So could have called Yaakov, Sergeant. Something with a sin and a rage, some name. But specifically, chosen for them were names that reflect a certain aspect, what would appear to us to be even an insignificant aspect of their births. Esav, because he was a finished product, and that at least says something about him. But Yaakov says nothing about him. The Akev was on Esav. So he's named, the person goes through life with a name because of some strange incident at the moment of birth. That's not how we name our names. Not that we're any less bizarre on occasion, but that's not how we do it. We find some symbolism. And note that all the names in Bereishis. Avram was Avram, a great father. Yitzhak, his name. Don't forget that Sarah left. So at least those are representative of certain ideas. Even Sarah, by the way, Miloshan Soros, authority, princess. So those names attach more to designations of the people, to accomplishments of the people, especially when they were older. But Esav and Yaakov are not. Esav and Yaakov literally are named for accidents of birth. So why should that be? Now Rashi says something else. V'achrechein yatsa achiv. Very interesting Rashi. Shamati medrash agada hadarsha lefi pshuto. Rashi says, I heard a medrash agada that expounded this according to the simple pshat. B'din hoya ochez bo le'akvo. That Yaakov was really holding on to Esav's heel in order to prevent him from emerging from the womb. Yaakov notzar mi tipa rishono ve'esav min hashniya. Yaakov really, on some level, was the firstborn because he was created from the first drop and Esav from the second. So really Yaakov was conceived first and Esav was conceived second. Seol mad mishfaferes shepiok tzara. Look as a mushal to a narrow tomb that has one opening. Tein bo shnei anovim, zotachazo. You put into that tomb two stones, first one, then the other. Which is the first one in? Last one out. Hanichneses rishono, teitze achrono. The first one that's in the tomb is going to be the last one out, because you put another rock in, the second rock comes out first. Nimtza Esav hanotzar bachrono, yotza rishon, comes out Esav, was created second, last, he came out first. V'yakov shenotzar rishono, yotza acharon. Yaakov, who was created first, he came out last. V'yakov bola akavo sheyehe rishon leido karishon liyitzira. And Yaakov was reaching out to stop Esav from coming out first, so that the first in birth should not be the same as the first in conception. The Yiftaras Rachma, and he would be the one who opened the womb, literally the firstborn. The Tolas Abchora Min Adin, and then he would have claims, justifiable claims, to the birthright, because he'd really be the firstborn. First of all, I'm not so sure it's medically accurate, right? A twin So identical twins are the product of one fertilized egg that splits. Fraternal twins are product of two eggs. So it's hard to say that certainly in the case of identical twins, that what we're reading is medically accurate. Not that Rashi intends that, but it doesn't sound right. And the whole thing, in fact, sounds very fanciful. Because what is the claim of Yaakov? The whole institution of Bechora is based on the fact that whoever comes out first is the Bechor. Makes no difference what calculations you make, the process of conception. It's a simple halacha. The head which emerges first, that is the Bechor. In fact, in the Medrash you find that this, in the Medrash Rabbah, whence Rashi took this pshat, the Medrash says, it's in the Parsha Samach Gimel Siman Ches, Matrona Shalas Rav Yossi ben Chalafta, a certain Roman matron, a notable of Rome, the wife of one of the notables, asked Rav Yossi ben Chalafta, Loma Yotza Esav Tchila, why was Esav born first? Amar Losa, he said to her, Tipari Shona Shal Yaakov Haisa, the first drop, well, that was the one created Yaakov. Omar lo, Moshe, im tanichu shtei margolios b'shofer sachas, if you put two pearls, two precious stones, in one tube, lo zoshat nosna rishona yotza achrona, the first one you put in is the last one out, kach tipa rishona shal Yaakov haisa. So the first drop was Yaakov, so in that sense he was really the Bechor. So notice, very often when these questions are asked by matronos, these Roman matrons, who were intrigued by Jews. Think about it. The Roman Empire was dominant at the time, and you had mass conversions to the religion of Rome, to paganism, and the Jews were the holdouts. So naturally attracted attention, people interested in Torah. What did you find? That, in fact, they asked questions, and the answers they were given were just to deflect them. They weren't anxiously trying to convert them. So he'd ask a question, sometimes a good one, sometimes a klutz kasha, and he would answer. He would answer and answer just to put her at ease, really to send her on her way. And that's what it seems here. The Nosei Kelim say that he answered a kedei laniach daita, just to put her at rest. That in fact, we don't subscribe to this theory, but it's just something to tell her. It sounds good on the surface. If you don't think too carefully into it, it sounds good and that's it. The problem is that Rashi quotes it. Rashi quotes it. It's not anymore Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta saying something to this matrona. It's Rashi saying, this is the pshat, medrash, shamati medrash agoda hador shalufi pshuto. So how's that the pshat in the pasuk? How's that the pshat in the pasuk? That itself sounds very strange. This we'll get back to. The question we have to ask, really, is why was the birth order so important? In fact, Rashi's telling us that the birth order is crucial, but there is a dimension to the birth order that we would not think of in the normal sense, hence the imagery of the Medrash. Why the emphasis on how they were born, and why these names, strange names, based on accidental aspects of their birth? The Levush Shaora, one of the super commentaries on Rashi, the famous Rav Mordechai Yaffa, was a later contemporary of the Mechaber. He raises these questions as well, and he doesn't accept this notion that the first one in is the last one out. The whole thing doesn't sound natural, nor should it have any halachic effect, because the only halach is in terms of which twin comes first. And in fact, he doesn't say it. Someone else, one of the other commentaries say, Yaakov Avinu blesses his son Reuven. Reuven b'choriat akachiv areishis oni. That Reuven was the first of the first product of Yaakov's progenitive skills. He was created from the first drop from Yaakov. But Chazal say that every twin, every tribe, each of the tribes was born together with a twin. And that twin became their wives. So Manavshach, if Reuven is the Bechor, and he was born with a twin, then according to this theory, it's really his female twin, which was Rishon, because he was the one who came out first. And on the other side, if in fact the twin came out first, the female twin, and Reuven came out second, so he's not Tochi Vereshis Oni. He's not even Bechor for that matter, because he came out second. So this notion, the Levush says, that the one conceived first is really the one that's considered the Bechor, that is non-existent in Halacha. So the Medrash has to be telling us something else. And the Levush answers, I think there's another change in the phraseology of the Pasuk that should call our attention to it. Vayetze Harishon Admoni, Harishon, the first one came out, and he came out with that ruddy complexion. What should the Pasuk say if Yaakov is coming out? Vayetze Ochiv Sheini, his brother came out second. Once you say first, first implies there's a second. Can't be a first unless there's a second. That's why, in fact, we say Vayer Vayvoker Yom Echad, one day. Because if you'd say first day, Yom Rishon, it would, by definition, mean there had to be a second, third, and fourth days. And that's not yet all of the Machshava. If you say Rishon, if you say Sheni, Vayer Vayvoker Yom Sheni, then once you have second, then it implies there's a progression, and you could have others. But one stands alone. The Pasuk doesn't say that Yaakov was born second. It says Vachrechein. He was born later, Yatzachiv. So what does it come to teach us? The Levush answered as follows. He said that V'lo shehoya kach b'mikre ula simon ba'al m'shekosu v'acharkein. You shouldn't think it's just happenstance. Just, you know, the a locution the Torah uses without having any significance. No, the contrary. That the perish is that he v'acharichein yotzachiv klomar v'teva hoya sheyotzah b'achrona. This really was intentional, that Yaakov would be conceived first, so to speak, and yet he'd be born second. But what's not l'fiyat teva is that a twin should be grabbing the heel of his predecessor. L'fiyat teva lomo yechos bo hateva. Okay, why is it? It's not nature. It's, in fact, very, very unusual. Sheyotza achron kulo rishon b'li iku v'sheni kulo achron k'mo shehu ha'moshel b'shnei anovim. What's normal is that, what? Anyone have twins here?
I have two sets of twins.
All right, so one comes out, right? One came out, I imagine. The second one came out, right? That's what I've read. That's what usually happens. But here the Torah is calling our attention to something else. The Torah is coming to teach us here that the formation and the birth of Yaakov and Esav are Bashkoch HaSanes. Hashkoch and Nes are not identical, by the way. Hashkoch is divine providence which operates without necessarily a miracle. Nes is a miracle. Here it was intentional that Yaakov should be born in a miraculous way. The nays being, it's not the teva for one child to grab another, to grab his brother, one twin to grab the other, and to highlight the fact that they were created, that they were born in this order with this event happening. Because Rivka was in Akara, right, as we know from the beginning of the Sedra, and here the Torah is emphasizing that the entire birth process of Rivka was different than the birth process for a regular woman. What these two psukim do is call our attention to the fact that something extraordinary is happening here. It's not a normal birth. It's not an average birth. For that matter, she did not have a normal conception or normal pregnancy, and therefore it portended that what is to happen to these two children would have consequences transcending the normal process of birth, which takes place from one mother to the children. So let's revisit the psukim and see exactly what the Torah is trying to teach us. Vayetze harishon admoni. The first came out admoni. Rashi says it was a shofech domim. He came out, he was almost destined to be a murderer. And yet, we see that phrase used elsewhere. V'kevon shira Shmuel es David, Admoni. When Shmuel Anavi was sent by Kadosh Baruch Hu to Yishai to select one of his sons as the first king of Israel, the first king of the monarchy of Israel from Yehuda. So, as the Navi relates, those who came to the Shir last year remember this well, the Shmuel, he had seven sons, and Shmuel Yishai brought out six, all of them gallant warriors, impressive physiques, and Shmuel kept saying, no, not him, not him, not him. Didn't feel Ruach HaKodesh. Until Shmuel said to Yishai, do you have another son? So he said, yes, he's the one, he's with the sheep. They didn't expect anything from him. Shmuel sees him, Vayishlach Vayiviehu, Vahu Admoni. He also had a ruddy complexion. Exact same word that Torah uses here. Nisyore, Shmuel became afraid. Vamar Avzeh Shofech Damim Kesav. Maybe this one will be a murderer, just like Esav was. Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu. So God said to him, no, it's not just Hu Admoni. Hu Admoni im Yifei Einayim. David had beautiful eyes. That is to say, Esav midas atzmo hu horei. Esav killed of his own volition. He made his own decisions. Judge, jury, executioner. Avolze midas Sanhedrin hu horeg. David will only murder based on Sanhedrin. Yifei Naim, he had beautiful eyes. So Chazal said the eyes of the generation are always the leaders, the Sanhedrin, the Talmid Chachamim, etc. They're the eyes of the community. Einayich, Kimigdal Hashen, Shlomo said in Shir Shir, that your eyes are like an ivory tower. They're all seeing. But it mean, I think it means something else. Admonim Yifei Naim, Yosef had perspective. Yosef had the ability to control these passions. He may have had on some level the same nature, David rather, had the ability to control his passions. He may have had the same basic nature as Esav did with that added dimension. Admoni im Yifei Naim. Esav was unrestrained. What's the Medrash telling us? Medrash telling us not only something about David, but something about Esav as well. See, what's the comparison here? Because there's a word, this one is ruddy, that one is ruddy, so someone who has a ruddy complexion, he's going to be a murderer necessarily. What the Torah is telling us is that in God's ideal system, we need Esav as well. Esav had a very important role to play. He wasn't banished from the house of Yitzhak arbitrarily. Esav had a significant role to play. But what's the difference between Esav and Yaakov? The roles that they were assigned, the roles they were destined to play in this great nation. Yaakov, the Medrash says, was created b'tipa rishona, with the first drop. It's not talking in a literal sense. Tipa rishona means Yaakov was designed to be the spiritual perfection. He was the ideal form. He was the goal. Ki b'yitzchok ikar l'chazara, b'yitzchok v'lo kol yitzchok. He was intended from birth to be the heir. That's why he was born the way he was. Esav came out first because Esav was olam hazeh focused. Esav was the one who would serve in a complementary role to Yaakov. Just like his parallel was David. What did David do? David was Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayom. David established the monarchy of Israel in the sense that he created the infrastructure of Jewish national life in a way which would endure forever so that we could, his people, Kol Yisrael, could better utilize the good of Olam Hazeh in service of Hashem. That's what David did. So we remember David now for Tehillim. But in fact, the Shiloh they had in ancient times was David. They didn't see him as the right of Tehillim. They saw him as the king who waged wars, who defeated the enemies of Israel, who was able to expand the territory of Israel, who established the monarchy. Before David became the Im Zmiras Yisrael, the sweet singer of Israel, David was a warrior, one of the great warriors of our history. David was the one who, in fact, played both roles, Yaakov and Esav in one. So it was originally intended to be a dual role in within one nation of Yaakov and Esav. Esav focused on Olam Hazeh, and Yaakov focused on the good of Olam Hazeh as well as Olam Haba. Esav on matters of Gashmi, is to sanctify the Gashmi, and Yaakov to benefit from the Gashmi, and then use them in service of Hashem. That unfortunately became corrupted. Esav was Esav. Esav became just a one who concentrated on Olam Hazeh as an end in itself, and not on Olam Hazeh as a means to an end. The Kli Yakar says this in a very beautiful way. The Kli Yakar says that Vayikru Shemo Esav, they called him, everybody called him. It's a pella, the way a child is born needing a shave. Shenasa v'nigro b'saro, zeo simon she'ye'ye olam hazeh chelko v'gorlo. The fact that he came out finished, a finished product, all done, that was a sign that Esav was olam hazeh oriented. That was his share. That was his portion. V'lo'ye lo od chelek v'olam ha'nitzchi. And if he did not, if he was not raised properly, or if better, if he did not exercise his bechira properly, he would forfeit the eternal world. What's the proof? Sinai makes a very sharp point, the Kli Yakar. The difference between acquiring the two worlds is miyaj kishenolad ha'odom hu mishtamesh b'chol ha'kelim ha'gashmiyam. The moment an infant is born, right away he utilizes all his senses. They're a little unrefined, but yet he uses all of them. He sees, he hears, he smells, he touches, etc. The child that's born immediately grasps Olam Hazeh. V'yesh lo miyad cheshek v'rotzon al kol ha'taivos, and right away the child has desires, right? Ki yetzer lev adam, ra minu rov, mishoshen inar lotes mibet en imo. As soon as the child starts emerging from the womb, the yetzer ra is implanted. In the sense the child becomes a creature who seeks instinctual gratification. What does a child want when they're born right away? Eat, exactly. So their senses already attuned to Olam Hazeh. That is exactly what the Torah is saying. Vayikru Shmo Esav, he was called Esav, everybody called him, Nasa v'nigmar saro. He was a finished product. In terms of his conquest of Olam Hazeh, all the basic elements, the basic tools, he already had. His senses were very refined. Physically, he was complete. When a child is born, so there's a part of him which is not fully developed. Hamoach, bless you. Halev, vasechel, the brain, the intellect, the intelligence, that's very unrefined. That's incomplete. The child needs to be trained in that sense. The child doesn't need to be trained to eat or to see or to hear or to smell. They react literally, instinctively to those senses. But to think, to know the difference between right and wrong, that's a developed sense. Ein ha'odah mishtamesh bo biyom higoldol klal. A person doesn't use his intelligence at all the moment he's born. I know every child looks bright. They come out, they're bright, they're brilliant, they're geniuses, etc. Geniuses from the womb. So when you let them into the world, they don't seem as bright. But from the womb, clearly. But what Kli Yakar is saying is true. Esav's the finished product because he'll choose this Olam Hazeh focused existence. Yaakov is not the finished product. Ain't other mishtamesh bobi yomi voldo klal. Those senses you don't need. But over time, ishtam, yoshev olim. That's what develops Yaakov. That's what the Kli Yakar says. The Malbim makes a similar point. The Malbim says that, the Malbim actually references a medrash that's also worthy of our analysis. The medrash says, same medrash, same paragraph I quoted from before. Lomo yotzo esav trila. What's that? Yeah. Okay. No, he didn't choose. He was finished. But it means he was fully right. He did choose. Yeah, absolutely. He chose it. But he was a finished product in the sense that what struck everybody. But he grew Vayikru Shmo Esav. They called him. Everybody said, who sees a child like this? He needs a shave. He's ready to walk around. Who has children like that? So they saw in that child that his tendencies led him, would lead him, to a purely Olam Hazeh-oriented existence. The point is, nothing inherently wrong with that, all right? You see, no, not that he chose that, that he seemed to be compatible with Olam Hazeh, that the child's essence was one which was more compatible with Olam Hazeh than a child who, you never know a child's going to be bright or not, but those who seek the pleasures of the intellect, they are ill-equipped to live in the world when they're first born, because there's nothing to satisfy them. I mean, there's chokhmah and a rattle, but not as much as a tzvos or a b'chaim. So that you have to wait for a little later on in life. You know, puzzles are also good, but it's not the same as learning Torah. So shofech damim, it sounds like a pejorative, but in fact, people are born with tendencies. Everybody has tendencies in one area or another. So he's a shofech damim. But he could be a shofech damim like Esav, or shofech damim like David HaMelech. It's two different types of, really the same personality, the same temperament, but it's heading in different directions. That's really the test of the parent, Agav Orcha. A parent has to recognize the tendencies of the child, and all children are different. So it's foolish to think that every child must do the same thing and learn the same way and have similar experiences, because in fact, it's not so. Some will enjoy it more, some enjoy it less. But a parent must be able to recognize and identify and advance the unique tendencies of the child. Or if the tendency, depending what it is, to guide it in a certain way. The Gemara says in Shabbos, the famous Gemara about the stars under which a person is born. So the Gemara says this very point that the Medrash is saying here. But let's say you have a child who has aggressive tendencies, right? The child can either be a yeshayichet, a butcher, or a moil. All right?
Surgeon.
That's correct. Assert. So there's actually three. To be a murderer, so that's an evil use of one's tendencies. If a person is a shaykhid, then it's a permitted use. Not a mitzvah necessarily, it's a permissible use. If one's a mayel, then that's a very refined use of the tzarech mitzvah. So it depends on how the child is guided, how those energies are channeled, which route they're going to choose. Now, the Medrash says something else. Loma yotza Esav tchila. Why was Esav born first? So listen to this. Kidei sheyetze hu v'teitze saryuso imo. So Esav would emerge first, and he would take the refuse, the debris of birth, along with him. Take all the blood and whatever's going on. Esav would take it with him, so Yaakov, the second born, would have a smooth sailing on the way out. He'd be accompanied not by blood and water and everything else, but he would just be able to slide out cleanly. It's Medrash. I'm Rabbi Abo. You think I'm saying this? And what would be wrong if I did? I'm Rabbi Abo. I wouldn't have thought of this. Kadein paravita shumishatev is based on merchatz, like the bathhouse attendant that sweeps away the water, the filth of the bathhouse, the acharkach merachetz beno shel melech, and then the prince comes to bathe. The prince won't bathe with everybody else, nor in a bathhouse which is unclean. So the prince is coming. You sweep away the refuse of the bathhouse. Then the prince comes. Rabbi Bo said that's why Esav came out first, to sweep away all the debris, so Yaakov will be able to emerge without any difficulty or any refuse, so to speak, accompanying him. So, what does this mean? Mama Esav Yata Trilo. You think on the surface that, what are they saying? The Medrash seems to be so far out. The Beis Halevi has a beautiful chat, which puts everything here in context. The Beis Halevi, the Brisker Rav, first of Yeshua Ber Soloveitchik, that's all. So he said as follows. Bechol hadvarim shebalam harishon hu iker. In everything in the world, the one that comes first is always the essence. Va'yisod bo'acharov. And the foundation, what's built on it, comes afterwards. Meaning the Rishon is always that which is preeminent. And it just lays the foundation for what comes afterwards. First, you build the first floor first. Then you build the second, third, and fourth. But the Torah doesn't say Rishon here. The Torah says HaRishon, the first. What's the first? So Beis HaLevi said, whenever the Torah uses the expression Rishon, it means the first, the preeminent. But when it says HaRishon, HaRishon just means that this is the precursor, this is the forerunner, the antecedent to what's coming after. All right? He gives an example. The king is in a parade. So who's first in the parade? Who's preeminent? The king. The king is the one who people come to see. So he is the preeminent personality in that parade. But does he literally march first? No. He has an entourage. He has servants who are running before him. So would you say, if you looked at that parade, that who was marching first in the parade? The servants? No. The servants were just the makdimim. They were the antecedents, the forerunners of the essential figure in that march, who is the king. When the Torah says, Vayetzei HaRishon Admoni, HaRishon doesn't mean the first. HaRishon means the precursor, the one who paves the way for the second, for the essential figure to emerge. That's why the word, excuse me, that's why the word here used is HaRishon. And that really is the imagery in the Medrash that Rabbi Abahu mentioned. That's the imagery. The child that comes out first takes the refuse of birth with him. It's not talking in a physical sense. It's talking in a philosophical sense. The Torah, Rashi, the Midrashim are emphasizing here that the essential birth is of Yaakov, but it's taking place in an unusual, extraordinary way, to make the point that even though Yaakov is preeminent, yet his fortunes are intertwined on some level, on a profound level, with his twin brother. As different as they are, nonetheless, they will go in different directions, but their lives and their destinies and their fates will always be intertwined. That's the mashal of Rabbi Abo, and that's what the Medrash says. It's like the parvito shemeshatev beis hamerchatz. Even though he's first, he's just a precursor. He's just the herald of what's coming after. And what comes after is much more significant. The Malbim said it in a cleaner sense. Yan shehayetzarach sheYaakov yetze tahor v'naki mikosig kadosh elokov, because Yaakov had to emerge pure and clean of any type of refuse, mark, blemish, etc. Kadosh le'lokov, holy to his God. Sha'av Esav ha'zuam otchila. Esav drew out all the zuam, all the filth with him. So Esav went with all the gashmias. To say, so to speak, that Yaakov emerged, it wasn't into a world of gashmias. It was into a world of holiness, a world of yoshev olim, a world in which he would absorb all the goodness, all the spiritual values, all the ideas of Yitzchak, and then be able to convey it to the next generation as well. That's the birth order. That's the Medrash as well. It's not Rishon. Yaakov was really the Rishon, because Yaakov was the one who was the true heir. To say he was the true heir is not to say that Esav is meaningless. It's on the contrary. Esav had a very significant complementary role to play if he wanted to. But what it does mean is that Esav is subordinate to Yaakov. That the Olam HaGashmi is always subordinate to the Olam HaRuchani. That's the way the world is set up. Yes? What's that? That's a buying the birthright. That's a separate story. That's a separate shiur. So that we've discussed also in the past. Yeah.
With this,
right. It depends how we understand the story to begin with. I mean, Rav Hirsch maintains the whole thing was just kids kidding around and had no significance except to dramatize that Esav had no interest in the life of Ruach. And that made the point clear that even on the day of Avram's death, when you think people are a little more spiritual, when someone dies. Even people not religious, they want to say prayers, they run to the temple, because it just awakens their mortality and the thoughts of other worlds. But Esav not. The day his grandfather Avram dies, he's out hunting, he's out to kill. In fact, the Rashi says, he raped a married woman, he worshipped idols, he killed, etc. So it didn't affect Esav. And what Yaakov did was dramatize that Esav had no interest. Just later on, many years later, when the brachos were to be distributed, then Esav did not want to accept the bracha of a subordinate life to Yaakov. That he did not want to accept, he would be his own nation. And so that's the bracha he received. I think we discussed it last year, 2 years ago. That's the bracha of Gashmitz for its own sake, which is a gift in one sense. It furthers civilization, but it's really a curse. Because what it does is sentence a person to a non-spiritual life. Now, of course, something else is happening here as well. So we discussed, we explored fully, I hope, why Esav was born first and why he was given the name Esav. Now, if you take the other, yes. Well, before, right, well, when there were children, yes, the Rashi says also, when there were children, that Rivka and Yitzchak just monitored them. And they saw they had different natures, but until a child really comes of age, you don't know. People change, kids change also from their youth, their adolescence. So they had to see exactly which direction. That's what the next pasuk says. Vayigdalu ha'ne'arim. It's only when they became of age, then Esav was Yodeh Tzayit Ish Sadeh, and Yaakov was Ishtam Yoshev Olam. Then the natures were more or less confirmed. Of course, something else is happening. Rashi says, Ba'akev Esav, he was holding on to Esav's heel, Simon she'en zeh maspik l'gmor malchuso, ad she'zeh omeid v'not lahimenu, as an indication that one, Esav would not be able to finish his monarchy before the other one would grab the monarchy from him. It means this is a sign of eternal conflict between Yaakov and Esav. So Kliyokar says, Zehoya Simon Shelo Osid Yevaza Esav Esa Bechoro, a sign that Esav in the future would mock the Bechoro. Kidavash Odom Dosh Ba'kevav Umivaza Oso. Like a person steps on something with his heel. Something we demean, what do? We step on it. That's the heel, Akev. In fact, that's in the Sedra Akev, Akev Tishmun. So Rashi says there, what's Akev? What mitzvahs should we listen to? Mitzvahs that people tend to trivialize, minimize. Mitzvahs shadam dosh bakevav. Mitzvahs people don't think anything of. They don't think it's significant. Those are the ones, Akev Tishmun is called mitzvahs Aila. Those ones we should listen to. In any event, the Torah wanted to highlight here this unusual aspect of the birth of Yaakov, and the fact that he was even given that name as a reminder of the way he was born. It means if you accentuate the heel, that Esav can never fully rule. Esav can be dominant, but he can never fully extinguish what Yaakov represents in the world. The Netziv says, and this is a really profound pasuk. V'yado chesus ba'kev Esav v'yikra shmo Yaakov. And the Mefarshim say v'yikra shmo is not even Yitzchak. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him Yaakov. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu designated Yitzchak's name, told Avram and Sarah they should call the child Yitzchak, so too God named Yaakov Yaakov. There's something in the nature of the heel that not only reflects the relationship of Yaakov to Esav, but in a broader sense reflects the way we relate to the nations of the world as well. The Netziv says it exists in two spheres. One when Esav is ascendant, and one when Esav is descendant. When Esav is ascendant, so yada ochezes ba'akev Esav, the Netziv writes that Yaakov is drawn after Esav. Drawn after him. What does that mean? The Netziv had a keen historical sense. It's interesting that the accomplishments of the Jewish people in exile were almost exclusively in the European exile. Because there we came into contact with the major cultural trends of humanity, and you're able to influence them. So Netziv said, Yadol Ches Bakev Esav, when Esav is ascendant, we're drawn after, literally, the West. We're drawn after European civilization. And Yadus underwent its fullest development. And I look at the people we had in exile. Rashi, Rambam, or the Balei Tosfos, all the great Rishonim. What's that? Well, the distinction is not in the, although the Jews were less numerous there, the Talmud exists there, that's right. So the Gemara says, he quotes the Gemara here, I didn't bring the Netziv with me. The Netziv says, the Gemara is a case of one of the Amoraim sitting in Bavel, and they were learning, and a Zoroastrian came in and extinguished their light. Because they had holidays. They're idolaters in that part of the world where they didn't allow any fire to be burned. They extinguished light. They couldn't learn. So this Amora exclaimed, O betulcha, O betula debar Esav. We should either be God in your shadow, under your protection, or the protection of the children of Esav, such as it is in their shadow. Because they represent a more civilized aspect, as opposed to Asia, as opposed to Africa. I mean, think about it. Again, we have the ability now to look back with some historical perspective. Jews, by and large, did not go to Africa, did not go to Asia. Jews, by and large, were concentrated in the Fertile Crescent and primarily in Europe. And there was a reason for that. The Netziv says that if Jews had gone en masse after the Churban Beis HaMikdash to Africa, so weather's better there than Europe, if we'd gone there, so we wouldn't have had the interaction with the Bnei Esav anymore. We would not have been able to influence them, nor been able to push civilization forward, as Jews did in every society. You think about it. It is a Eurocentric world until today. I don't want to say dead white European males, some of them are Jews, but in fact, those were the civilizing aspects of the world. So much so that, who discovered America? Columbus. He found people living here already? How could he have discovered it? No, but that's a Eurocentric approach. Of course there are people living here already. Of course the Nordics came centuries before. But from our perspective, he took the new world and made it part of the old world. So from a European Western perspective, he was the discoverer. What's intriguing is that Jews latched themselves to Esav's heel when Esav was ascendant. Because Esav represented this dominant civilizational force, and on Esav's coattails, which is a different expression than heels, on Esav's coattails, we were able to be participants in the great drama of world history. That is when Esav is ascendant, Yadol Ches Bakev Esav. What if when Esav is not? When Esav is not, then Yadol Ches Bakev Esav, the Netziv says, we limit Esav. Esav has a tendency to be too aggressive, to be too violent. He's admoni, shofech damim, without any inhibitions at all. So when the Jewish people are ascendant, those few decades in history where we are, then Esav learns from us. And Esav is able to moderate his tone. Or, better said, when will Klal Yisrael be ascendant? L'mas HaMashiach. Then v'olu Moshe mehar Tzion l'shpot es har Esav. By Sol Hashem, Hamlucha. And that, in fact, is the fulfillment of the prophecy that Rivka received. Shnei goyim bevidneich, shnei lu'umim mimeayich yiparedu, ul'om il'om yamatz. One people will contest, strive with another, v'rav ya'avod tzair. Rav ya'avod tzair, the stronger, the older, will end up, at the end of days, serving the younger one. This really is Yadol Ches Bakev Esav. This is a fulfillment of that nevuah. That in fact, we will eventually be superior to Esav. Eventually. But through most of history, we're grasping at Esav's heels. We're trying to avoid being stepped on and trying to move him and mankind closer to the day of V'hoysel Hashem Hamulcha. Esav is our brother. It's tough to have brothers. I remember I said once at a dinner about someone, that the guest of honor said he's been like a brother to me, like Esav was to Yaakov. But in fact, Esav was a brother. Esav is a complement to Yaakov. That's the original intention of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Esav can be a complement, or he can be an adversary. For most of history, unfortunately, he's been our adversary. Because if Esav is not subordinate, then he's going to be dominant. In fact, that's the bracha that Yitzchak eventually gave Esav. Gashmius for the sake of Gashmius, which we suffer from until today. Eventually, you always live by the sword, and eventually have to serve your brother. But when Yaakov demeans himself, when Yaakov diminishes himself, then you'll be able to throw off the yoke of Yaakov from around your neck. That's been the history. That when Esav is dominant, he is dominant. And we become inferior. We become subordinate. Worse, we become persecuted. The Gemara derives from that pasuk, Shnei goyim v'vitneich ul'om mil'om yamotz, that really Yaakov and Esav are involved in a zero-sum game throughout history. When Yaakov is ascendant, Esav is not. When Esav is ascendant, Yaakov is not. As the Gemara says, the Medrash in Eicha quotes it, if someone tells you that both Rome and both the Caesarea and Yerushalayim, Rome and Yerushalayim, they're both thriving, don't believe it. If someone tells you neither are thriving, don't believe it either. Al tamin. But if they tell you Yerushalayim is thriving and not Caesarea, or Caesarea and not Yerushalayim, that you believe. Because that's for Rav Yavod Zahir. Yes. That's the pasuk. Va'olu Moshe Mahar Tzion l'shpotes har Esav. To judge, meaning to judge here means to punish, really. But Esav at that moment will recognize his subservience and his ability to assist Yaakov in service of Hashem. Voisol Hashem l'ra. That's right. Yeah, yeah. Esav son of Yaakov, right. Yes, that's a different framework already. Because when does it end? When even Esav recognizes Vaisal Hashem Hamlucha, that's the pasuk. When Esav recognizes Malchus Hashem, and Malchus Hashem manifests itself in the world through Klal Yisrael, that's exactly when that is Yemos HaMashiach. And Yemos HaMashiach can only bring that about. That's Verav Yavot Zer. Ultimately, Ruchnius wins out. The creature of Olam HaZeh, Esav, will eventually pay deference to the Akev, to the heel, the one who this in this world appears lowly, subservient. Esav will recognize the original pattern that existed and become that partner to Yaakov, and that really represents the goal and the realization of a Malchus Hashem on earth. Okay. Thank you very much.